This podcast is sponsored by Low No Drinker magazine, the number one UK magazine for the sober, curious drinker, bringing you news, reviews and interviews from the people, places and brands leading the low and no alcohol revolution. As a Sober Rebel listener, use code SOBERREBEL15 to get 15% off any digital or print subscription from the Low No Drinker magazine for 6 whole months. Hello and welcome to the Sober Rebel podcast, where I talk to my guests about the benefits of sobriety that they've experienced. We focus on how they got sober, why they got sober, but most of all, we focus on why they enjoy staying sober. And today I'm talking to someone I've had the privilege to get to know, and she is such an inspiring lady. She's inspired me in many ways. It's Lucy. Lucy, hello. How are you?
It's great to be here. So it's so nice to, one, see you again on Zoom, but also I just feel so privileged to be able to speak, you know, have this platform on your podcast just to tell my story. And if that kind of resonates with any one person, that's a win in my world. So yeah, I'm super excited to be here. So yeah, really lovely to see you.
I can't wait. So do you want to start by telling us a little bit about how you came to sobriety? Because I know you've just celebrated a milestone. I'll leave it to you to talk about that.
Okay, thanks. So I'll just kind of do a little bit of introduction to myself. So I'm Lucy and I'm nearly 52 next month. I live just outside Brighton on the Downs, so a really lovely place. And I live with my husband of 9 years. And I've got 2 kids, 22 and 13, just a 13-year-old at home with us now. And I was a nurse for 27 years, specialising in the corporate world for 18 of those. And then I moved into being a Pilates instructor. I'm also a reformer teacher. And then I most recently been studying as a positive psychology coach. So a lot going on. And you know what? I'm in an amazing place. I'm just over 6 months alcohol free, which doesn't sound that much, but I've been on this journey now for 4 years. So I became sober curious when I was 48. I hit my perimenopause and my drinking just had changed. I just noticed that there were these red flags that I noticed, thoughts in my head which hadn't originally been there, and just how it was making me feel. And health and wellness have been my life, you know, my lifelong career and passion. And I suddenly realized that the drinking of the wine was not aligning with my core values. And I think one of the reasons I wanted to come on and share my story is that I was probably stuck for those 4 years. And I say I was stuck, or what kept me stuck and not being able to actually continue my AF journey from when I started 4 years ago. And I think it was because I wasn't the greatest of drinkers, but I kept comparing myself. And that was the problem. I kept comparing myself to other drinkers, whether it was in the alcohol-free space or whether it was just with friends. Now, to some people, I would have not drunk very much. And to some other people, I would probably have drunk a lot. And I think that's the problem a lot of the time is for, as a middle lane drinker, it's that you compare yourself and think, well, I'm not that bad. It's not had any, you know, real consequence on my life. Nobody thinks I'm drinking too much. I'm the life and soul of the party when I drink. And what I wasn't asking myself was, how is it making you feel? And I think that is the biggest thing that we don't, especially as these middle-aged drinkers, where it's not having a massive effect on your life, is we're not asking ourselves, how is it actually making me feel? And so that's what kept me stuck for that time. Yeah.
And I think that's really common, isn't it? I know I'd probably say the same thing, because you can always look to other people, and we compare.
Yeah.
And that comparison was the thing that kept me stuck. I could always find somebody that drank less, and I could always find somebody that drank more.
And I would often gravitate, if I'm honest, towards the people that drank more. And then I could justify in and sort of safety in numbers. I used to feel, well, it can't be wrong because everybody's doing it, you know, but everybody wasn't doing it. So when you step back, you realize actually there's a lot of people that either don't drink or drink a heck of a lot less.
And my drinking obviously did change as it does. I think when I was young, so in terms of just giving you a brief, overview of my kind of background, I think I was kind of in that sense quite normal, tried drinking at 13, or whether when I say that now, I'd be horrified if my 13-year-old now had a, was sneaking drink away. But my goodness, I'm sure that back then we just, I'm obviously, I was that age in the early 80s. So parents just had a cupboard full of all these spirits, which never really got drank. They were just this cupboard full of spirits and crystal decanters with various revolting whiskies and goodness knows what in. But we don't have that now, or at least, I've never had as an adult had that sort of wine cupboard or drinks cupboard. But so I probably tried a drink when I was 13, but it didn't, it was horrible. I didn't like it. But I think there was a common theme as I went through my teens, my 20s, my 30s, that I just never felt good enough. I didn't ever feel like I fitted in. And that just went with me through those years. And I think that started from my dad left the family home. Not that he was around all the time, he worked away. My mum and dad divorced when I was 13. And in a quite quick period, they divorced. We moved house, but I stayed at my school. And so I used to have to get two trains and a 40, 50 minute walk. I was the only one in the bottle green uniform. Everyone else was in navy blue around me, And I just felt like I didn't fit in. And I always just was a bit of a follower. And I did kind of lean into the people who were up to no good. And so I always felt quite bad for doing naughty things, but I just did because I just felt lost. I didn't really know what I was doing, where I was going. And yeah, so there was with my dad leaving, and then unfortunately, we tried to have a relationship, but he just cut himself off from the family. And I think that's where it kind of stemmed from, what's wrong with me? I'm not good enough. Why didn't he want me as his daughter? And all of those feelings, even though I now know that there was nothing to do with me, he obviously had his own issues going on. I have no idea. I don't see him. But at the time, I didn't have the ability to understand these emotions. And so I allowed myself to just believe that. And then, so then that carried on with me in then relationships. If they then broke up, well, I'm not good enough. It's all my fault. And so, I just allowed these feelings, I allowed myself to believe that this was all true. And my drinking was just, I would say it was very normal, in terms of, it wasn't something I did, but when I went out, I would drink probably too much, but I was never the last one at the party. I always managed to get myself home. I didn't actually like being drunk.
We're so similar, aren't we? I mean, I never liked being drunk.
Hated feeling drunk. I'm not saying I didn't get to the point where I felt really ill and was sick, but it was, I'd always get myself home, but I never really enjoyed the whole drinking thing in that sense, because I was always quite conscious of my weight. And of course, drinking, always made me used to make poor food choices, not exercise. So I never really enjoyed the whole drinking side of things. But yeah, it was kind of more of a that kind of binge drinking thing, which I think in a way a lot of youngsters do more of. They don't sort of sit at home with a glass of wine, that kind of thing. So that kind of went through my 20s and 30s, and again, it didn't really, it was there. I now again know, it helped me through social, big social occasions. I used to have to go to quite a lot of conferences with work, so many people, and the wine would be flowing, so I'd always drink too much at those. I now realize I just don't enjoy being amongst big crowds of people. So I definitely used to drink just to get me through a social occasion. I always used to be the life and soul of a party. People always used to just think I was, well, I think the drinkers used to think I was great fun. I reckon probably the people who weren't drinking that much would probably find me annoying. Now I look back, because I just got very excitable, would always get everyone up, probably organize a big dance routine between everyone. You know, it was that sort of thing. And I suppose you become used to being that person. You mold yourself around that. My drinking started to change when I was probably in my mid-40s. It was a time in my life where there was a lot of change. I'd split up from my son's father. I'd met a wonderful man, my husband, which was amazing. But when I moved in with him, which should have been the most amazing thing, it was a lot of change. So I moved in, and we moved in our blended families. And so I left a job that I absolutely loved. It was only an hour away from my hometown, but it was long enough to move away from my world. I had moved in with my stepson, which was very difficult. Not that he's not lovely, but it was just I couldn't cope with having an 18-year-old or 16-year-old at the time who was just allowed to do what he wanted, because I'd always had a routine and it just didn't work. And so that was really difficult. And I found it was just a really strange feeling, and it was very unsettling. I didn't have a job because I'd left mine, and we'd kind of budgeted for me to have a year off so that I could find what I was, going to do. But that didn't work for me, because I'm very busy. I love being busy. I love having a purpose. And so that was tough. My husband had been diagnosed with prostate cancer. We'd found that out before we moved in together, and the reason we delayed the surgery slightly was because we wanted to be living together so that I could be there for him. So 2 weeks after we moved in together, and this was after being just together 3 years, he had radical prostatectomy, and he had very successful surgery for that. But I think what a lot of people don't realize is that a man will then, it cuts all the nerve endings, so they can't use it. So for the next 3 years, we had that to deal with. And even though it was very much obviously happening to my husband, it was psychologically a massive impact on me. And if I'm honest, we went into it a little bit blindly, the surgery. We thought that he would be back up and running in 3 months, and it just wasn't happening. And we tried all sorts of things. And but it took its toll after a while, and it started to make me think, is there something wrong with me? Does he not love me anymore? Does he not fancy me? He was then obviously had his own issues. What's wrong with me? Why can't I? And it was really difficult. And then, he had to use medications, which you had to then do it on demand. And sorry if I'm being, oversharing, but I think it's sometimes really important to talk about
Yeah,
these things,
that's
because
so difficult.
it was horrendous, actually. And we were very much a new couple and very much in love, and it really took its toll. And I was the sort of person back then that thought, well, I can't, I need a drink. I need a drink if I'm going to do it, that kind of. And also, because it became quite a chore, which sounds an awful thing to say, but it did. It became a regimented, almost like physiotherapy session. And it would be like, oh, I'll have a few drinks, get me in the mood kind of thing. And it just really took its toll. 3 years later, everything worked out, and we're in a best, brilliant place now. However, so there was that. We were also planning our wedding during COVID, and everything about our wedding changed. But again, that turned out all beautifully and lovely. But again, that was just one another thing. I fractured my ribs. I got a piece of meat stuck in my throat, and my brother had to do the Heimlich maneuver. Fractured my ribs in the process, but he did save my life. And then the following year, so this is all in between, this is all in a couple of years. I then. And in COVID, most of that. I then got hit by a car on my road cycle, because I'm a big road cyclist, and punctured my lung and fractured my ribs and ended up in hospital.
Oh, Lucy.
Yeah, I know. And I've never broken a bone, anything
And
before.
it all happened
It
in.
all happened in these few years. I say few years, it was between probably 2019 and 2021. So yeah, it seemed it was a lot. So yeah, there was a lot going on. I trained as a Pilates teacher in that time, but it was a huge amount going on, and I realized I'd started to turn to alcohol or wine as that, oh, it's been a stressful day, or oh my God, I've got so much going on. And I really noticed it changing. And also, just to add to that, as if that wasn't enough, and again, lots of people have lots of stuff going on, don't they? But it was tough. My son's father, unfortunately, he was a big drinker and had been when I'd been with him previously. And he became in a big pickle with drinking, an absolute pickle. And unfortunately, during this time, we had to stop my son going to him on a couple of occasions. And it was very difficult because it was COVID. So I didn't quite know the severity of his drinking, but all I knew was that he just looked awful. And it got to the point where I sat my son down, who was, I guess, probably only about 9 or 10 back then, and just said, you know, do you see daddy drinking? And he said, yes. And I said, do you see daddy drinking at lunchtime or in the morning? And he said, oh, yes, daddy drinks in the morning. And I said, how do you know? And he said, oh, he walks around with a mug of wine. And just my, oh, I felt so awful that I hadn't said it before and asked my son, because I could see that he just desperately was wanted to be allowed to share that. And probably because he wanted to help his dad, you know. And I just couldn't believe it. And I again, I had to stop my son going to his dad's, and he, you know, hats off to him. He went into the rehab and he's been sober ever since. And I think he just needed, he's, I don't know the details. I imagine he'd probably been trying a long time, but he did manage to stop and he stays stopped. But so I had that all to deal with. And all through that, I realized I was then kind of coming home after dealing with him, and he was a nightmare. He was a nightmare to deal with. He was awful by text. My son said, you know, it was awful. He wasn't in his right mind, you know, at the time. And it was very difficult to manage. And of course, I had all this other stuff going on. And I'd be coming home and thinking, oh, I need a glass of wine. And that's when I just noticed it changing. So I was, you know, about 48, and there were these red flags, and it was so weird. I'd suddenly realize I'd go into a restaurant. If we were with people, I'd be eyeing up other people's glasses of wine. And, you know, oh, well, are we drinking at the same rate? And, oh, you know, and almost focusing more on the wine than the conversation. Or if we went out, I wouldn't be able to relax into conversation until I'd ordered the wine, and then I could relax. And I thought, my goodness. And but I was really aware of it as well. I was so aware of it. Yeah, there was just those red flags. And then I noticed this chatter in my head suddenly appear. We know what we're talking about, the chatter, the wine witch, the wolf, whatever you want to call it. And I was really aware of that. Suddenly, that negotiation, oh, are you going to drink tonight? No. And I was a kind of Friday, Saturday. We were Friday, Saturday, and we got into this really just typical habit of Friday, Saturday. And again, I know it's not about a quantity, but my husband and I got into this boring old habit of we'd buy a bottle of Prosecco, bottle of wine, we'd share the bottle of Prosecco before dinner with some nibbles, and then we'd have dinner and we'd share a bottle of white wine. And then we'd have maybe a gin and tonic each on the Saturday and share a bottle of wine. Now, again, to some that sounds a lot, to some that doesn't sound anything, but it became that habit. And then I noticed sometimes it would be like, oh, should we have a drink on a Thursday night? And then it would be like, oh, should we share a bottle on a Sunday night just to kind of close off the weekend nicely? And it never got more than that, apart from, I think, probably the first 2 weeks in COVID, where we probably drank every day because everyone else was and it was sunny and lovely. And then the only other time I'd ever drank every day was maybe on a holiday. But again, this is what I mean. I wasn't the craziest drinker. But I would then sometimes, if we had a dinner party or party, then I would maybe drink more than I'd want to. But again, 11 o'clock, I'd be like, I want to go to bed. I'm all good. And then I noticed, so when I hit my menopause at 48, perimenopause, that's when I really noticed as well, I got massive anxiety, like through the roof anxiety. And I went on to HRT and I would say to my husband, "Oh, was I all right last night?" And he'd be like, "Yeah, you're absolutely fine." But in my head, I was like, "Oh my God, did I say anything? Did I do anything?" And he'd be like, "No, you'll use yourself. You just got a bit excitable, you get a bit louder, but you're great." But I just then felt so anxious. And then the 3 a.m. wake ups, feeling all hot and flustered, palpitations. And I always was somebody that would then stuff my face if I'd had a drink. If there was anything left to be hoovered up, I'd hoover it up. And I hated that about myself, because I did suffer with bulimia when I was in my teens. And that was something that I was really self-conscious about. I've always been self-conscious about, being fit and well, and that I really hated that I just used to just literally mindlessly eat. So that's when I became sober curious. I didn't even know it was a thing. I can't even remember how it happened. Just suddenly remember falling on some podcasts. And I managed 42 days when I first tried. And I was like, "Oh my God, that's amazing. Like 42 days, get me." Couldn't believe it. Went back to drinking. And then just sort of went back to drinking. But then again, I just was like, it's sown the seed. I'd listened to enough, I'd read enough. It's sown that little seed of you can't unknow what you know.
Yeah, and that's
And
not, I say to people,
yes.
that is the point that you are. I sort of go, I'm really sorry. You're not going to be able to put your head back in the sand now. And that's where it can get painful if you keep drinking, knowing that you want to stop or how bad it is for you.
Yes. And so I tried again, then I thought I don't want to be feeling like this when I turn 50. So I then did 7.5 months up to my 50th, 2 weeks after my 50th, started drinking. And I think what I found the problem was then, people say all the time, and you hear it a lot, "Well, you've got to do the work. Got to do the work." And I'm like, "Okay, I'm doing the work. I'm on a group, alcohol-free group online, and I'm reading books and I'm listening to podcasts. So I'm doing the work." But we all, depending on who we are and the reasons as to why we were drinking, we've got to do our own work. And that's going to be different for everyone, isn't it?
It is.
And so I thought I was doing the work, but and I had a great 7 months, 7.5 months, but then I went back to drinking. And I think I put so much emphasis on just getting to my 50th that it's like, right, I've done it now. Go back to
Like an
drinking.
end point, wasn't there? Yeah.
And then I went back to drinking, and I then just did lots of months on, months off, and what I realise now, and I don't regret it, I moderated basically. I was able to moderate, but it was exhausting, as we know. It was exhausting, but I could do it. And I sometimes had these conversations, well, I had a lot of conversations with my husband, and he would say, "Well, do you not think maybe you could just enjoy a night of drinking, and okay, then you're going to maybe feel a bit rough if we go out to a party or whatever, and then you just feel rough for the next day." And as I had more evidence in my cup of the pros and cons, I started thinking, but I don't want to feel rubbish. I don't want to waste a whole day just for a few hours of, as we know, perceived fun. I don't want that. And so when it came round to this time round, I'd found you on Instagram. I'd been following you and just keeping an eye on you. And I just wanted to give it, it was just the right time. There's a time I think that you just get to where there was for me. And I just thought, nope, I'm doing it. I'm doing this. I'd found you. And the reason, Louisa, that you resonated with me so much, and this is what I mean by doing the work, is that I loved the fact that, one, you're on your own sober journey, but two, you were a qualified therapist. And I'd talked about getting some therapy for the whole of these reasons of not feeling good enough and not fitting in and all of those, limiting beliefs that I had. And I used to say to my husband, "Oh no, but I can't afford it, it's a lot of money and all of this." And he said, "My God," he said, "we're spending goodness knows on how much doing up our house, but you won't spend it on your health." And I was like, "Yeah, you're right." So I got in touch with you and I did your amazing program. 21 days, and with the sessions, the four sessions, I think it is, that you do with your package. And obviously got to join the amazing Facebook group. And it was just, well, it was just a turning point for me. It just, I mean, one, I was ready, I felt it. But having those sessions with you, Louisa, what I realize now is, one, I wasn't doing the right sort of work for myself. But two, what I really needed to work on was my mindset. And that was the biggest game changer, the absolute biggest game changer, because alcohol was just serving a symptom, it was a symptom, it was serving a purpose, of quieting my overthinking brain, just whatever, just dealing with my anxiety and stress, I thought. And what I really needed to do was just do a bit of a deeper dive and just change my mindset. I'll never forget, and it stuck with me, one of the things you said to me. So I was talking to you about this whole feeling of not fitting in. I don't feel I fit in. I've never fitted in. And I've always been on a periphery of a group. And again, that's made me think, what's wrong with me? And you said, but you don't want to fit in. And I cannot, how sometimes things just go, oh my God. When you said that, and it's never left me. And I was like, no, you're right. I don't want to fit in. And all of a sudden, it was like my shoulders just were able to relax. And I was like, I don't want to fit in. And I don't have to fit in. And from that point on, I was able to start really changing that. Alongside that, after I had several more therapy sessions with you, which again really helped with those limiting beliefs, the whole not good enough, not fitting in, without realizing it. And I think we talked about this at the time. You can become almost like a victim to your own background or thoughts or beliefs, but victim to your beliefs, I guess. And I think without meaning to necessarily, it's we can hide behind those because in a way it's easier if we have maybe a label or something to keep us stuck. Because even though I've always been a doer and I've been motivated and I'm pretty driven, I was stuck because I was probably scared to step out of that feeling of I'm not good enough. It kept me safe in my weird old world for a while. And you probably know far more about that than I do.
It's a really common one. I'm not good enough. It's the one of the ones that I had as well growing up, that feeling of not being good enough. Mine was rooted in now I realize neurodivergence and just feeling different, like you say. But I would say to people, step back. You're assuming everybody else feels a part of something. Whereas when you talk to people, if you actually ask them, then a lot of people do actually say, no, I feel like I'm just on the outside looking in here. I feel like everybody else has their shit together and I'm just watching. Or so we overestimate other people's experience and underestimate our own.
Yeah. We always think everyone else has got it all worked out, don't we? And, we're only, as adults, we're just kind of, we just look older.
Exactly, we're still the same kid inside, aren't we? We've just gone up. We're now taking HRT, that's all.
Everything's moving south, but we've just got the same kind of mindset, well, as in like immature kind of like, we're just trying to work it everything out ourselves. And, you get to a certain age and think, oh my God, I should have it all sorted. But, we don't. And however, saying that, finally, at the grand old age of nearly 52, I actually feel like I am a grown up. I feel like I am living my most authentic life and being my most authentic self. And I'm just finally it, and look, it's a work in progress, probably forevermore, but I've been working so hard on trying to just Just be so comfortable with the fact that this is me. This is me. And I'm not trying, because I've always felt like I was a bit of a chameleon. I'd always try and fit in to what other people, I thought maybe other people wanted.
Yeah. And
And
again, you're projecting that, aren't you? Again,
yes.
you're not, it's not necessarily what they want. And then you're like, well, I've got
No.
that wrong. Why doesn't that feel right? Because you've assumed what they
Yes.
want. And you'll
Yes.
never fit in with everybody. You're never going to be able to be that sort of chameleon that would, it's too inconsistent. You just wouldn't be able to do it.
No. And I think the sooner you can start living like that, my goodness, it's really powerful and it's very freeing. And I've been on the Andy Ramage positive psychology course, and for me, again, that was something that I wanted to do as a self-development tool. That was something that was super important to me, and just almost a testimony to how much I wanted to stay accountable this time, do the deep dive working. That was through you, through your Facebook, and through this course. And I'm now just realizing how just changing that mindset, and how also we get stuck in these beliefs. And I realized how stuck I was in this belief. And we believe that our beliefs are facts, and
Yeah.
they're just not. And how we all have different beliefs. So we're all coming from different places in our lives. And we all learn these beliefs, don't we, from our childhood, through what we've done in our lives, through the people we've met. And so we believe those. They are facts. And actually, they're not necessarily at all. And it's just so fascinating. And so I'm now on this journey, Louisa, as you know, that through this course, I was only ever doing it as a self-development tool. And as I've gone through it, I'm now filling up this kind of, I'm so full of knowledge and all this new wisdom that I've been learning. And all I want to do is now, just as a lot of other people who stop drinking do, is just try and help other women in midlife. Because I know that I felt very stuck and lacking in a lot of meaning and purpose. And I really, really believe that sometimes people drink, well, a lot of the time people drink through loneliness, boredom, and stress.
Yeah.
And I really believe it's because a lot of the time we don't have that meaning and purpose in our lives. And I think, especially at midlife, we get to a point where we don't really know who we are. We have been a mother, or we might not been a mother. We might have been a career person. I heard this. Eleanor Mills, who runs this online forum Noon, I heard her say that by the about the age of 50, a woman might have been through about five kind of trauma issues, if you want to call them that. So maybe a divorce, they might have had a career change, they might have lost a parent or a loved one, they might have been diagnosed with a chronic illness, or just been suffered with something, and they might have emptiness syndrome, so all of those sorts of things. And so you get to that point, and it's like you're a little bit lost, and you can feel a bit stuck. And no wonder so many women of midlife have had turned maybe to drinking more wine.
Yeah. It's obvious, isn't it? I mean, it's the thing that's there. It's the thing we're told will solve all our problems.
Yeah, I just think that if people can find something that's full of meaning and purpose in their lives, when we go through a trauma, something like, and I say trauma, divorce, and these are traumas. They're massive events in our lives, or empty nesting. They can have a real impact on our lives, or losing a lost one. We are forced to change.
Yeah.
We are absolutely forced to change. But then actually, that change brings on growth. And that's often when people have the chance to really flourish. And I think sometimes when we have to think about making those changes ourselves without anything bad happening,
Yeah.
we let fear hold us back. And for me, definitely, by removing alcohol. And you always hear this about people who've removed the alcohol, because when you do remove the alcohol, and again, it doesn't matter how much or how little, it gives you that space, first of all, that time and that space. A lot of people who stop drinking, again, they suddenly opened up because they suddenly feel a little bit vulnerable, a little bit like, whoa, I'm a bit out there and I've got nothing to hide behind now. And so it's quite scary. And so many people do that kind of, they go on this journey of self-discovery. And again, doesn't matter how much you are drinking, when you remove it, it's so empowering.
Yeah.
It literally has been probably the hardest thing I've ever done. And I've been through some bloody hard stuff in my life. But removing something that has been that constant in your life, no matter how big or small, to suddenly not give a monkey's about it, oh my God, it is so freeing. And they say kind of like, I've heard several people say like removing alcohol makes you brave. And I think that what it does is, yes, it makes you realize that you can do hard things,
Yeah.
you know?
Oh, massively.
And it allows you to maybe just have that space to then think, what else could I do? You know, what else could I achieve? And I think for me especially, me going and doing this course and now me wanting to use this course, you know, I want to, you know, help midlife women, and I'm going to do a workshop in my village. And it scares the hell out of me because I want to give back. I want to help support other women find their meaning and purpose and maybe change their mindset, give them tools and do things like that. I haven't quite worked it out yet. I haven't got there, but it's all bubbling away.
Seems brilliant.
Well, I hope so, but it scares the hell out of me. But then I have to keep saying to myself, well, what's the worst thing that can happen? If I don't try, well, where does that leave me? And for me, I know if I hadn't have stopped drinking, I wouldn't have found you and had those amazing sessions. I wouldn't have gone on my psychology coaching course. I wouldn't now be thinking about running workshops for women in their midlife. I wouldn't be doing any of that.
Yeah.
How cool is that?
It's
I feel
open
so
doors.
proud of myself.
Oh, you should feel proud of yourself.
I'm not anyone special. I'm no different from anyone else. Do you know what I mean? I'm not, there's nothing different about me, but what I do have is a passion now to live with as much meaning and purpose in my life.
Yeah.
And everyone's got that within them. Everyone.
What would you say that some of the things you've done or some of the things you changed that made that shift from being sober curious to committed to it?
I think what I started with, I think be true to yourself. Listen to that feeling in your head and your heart and your gut. How is alcohol making me feel? Because it was making me feel rubbish. Stop looking at what anyone else is drinking. Stop comparing yourself. Just stop it right away because it's never going to work. And you'll always find that reason to then to carry on drinking. And I kept on thinking, oh, well, you know, even if I only felt really rubbish, maybe once, twice, three times a year when I was moderating, it was too much. It was just too much. And it's like, am I willing to sacrifice a whole day or even half a day of feeling, even if it was just feeling a bit meh? I don't want to feel meh because of a drug, you know, because there's going to be times in my life where I feel meh because I'm not well or I've
Yeah.
got something and I can't help that. But I can stop myself from feeling meh from alcohol. So it's really about, I really think that, you know, because it wasn't something that was impacting my life in that sense, just really take a long, hard look and say to yourself, how is it making me feel? Could I feel better without alcohol? Could my life be better without alcohol?
And I think it is a resounding yes, isn't it? I mean,
Yes. Yeah, but you
you're
know
an
what?
advert for sobriety, I will say.
But you know, it takes time. And that probably leads me nicely into a second one, is that You're going to be ready when you're ready.
Mm.
And I think we have to be practical and also expect that the likelihood of you just stopping and that's it forevermore is very unlikely. You've had a lifetime of drinking on all these different occasions. You're not going to suddenly be able to stop. Some type people do, some people have to, whatever. I needed these 4 years, I suppose, of going backwards and forwards, moderating, seeing how it felt. Yeah, I had fun then, but I didn't have fun then. Oh, I really didn't have fun then. and kind of those backwards and forwards, filling up my evidence cup of pros and cons. It's a very personal thing. And of course, when we have that slip, we beat ourselves up and it's like, oh my God, I'm useless. I'm a failure. Why can't I do that? No, you're not a failure. There's nothing about that. It's actually, these are all just data points. They're data points because you can use them down the line. And it's like, oh yeah, I remember that point when I had a drink. Oh my God, yeah, it was crap. Or, oh, I had a really good night. But then, okay, you had a great night. However, what did that lead on to? Well, probably started me drinking again a bit more than I was going to. And so I think that's my second one is just don't beat yourself up. Because I, on this time round, I completely look at alcohol in a different way. I don't want it. And even my husband said, so he's literally said this the other day. He said, the difference this time round to when I did my first 7.5 months, he said, I was a little bit on eggshells, he said, that first 7.5 months, because I always felt guilty if I drank or if we talked, he said, I could see that you were a little bit on edge about it. You weren't relaxed, even though you weren't drinking and but you weren't quite comfortable with it. And that's because I wasn't. This time around, he said, I can tell you don't even give a monkey's about it. You don't give a monkey's about alcohol. And he said, I can see that that's completely changed you this time around. And I do. I'm not even looking at it when we go out. I think about it because I'm in the alcohol-free space, but it's different. You're thinking about it differently, aren't you?
I think that's a very good point, isn't it? And I think, I mean, we are talking, and I sort of have to specify, we're talking about grey area drinking here because if you are alcohol dependent, then a slip can be very, very
April.
serious. But this is grey area drinking where somebody is saying, look, I'd like to stop, oh, I've gone to that wedding and I ended up not being able to stay alcohol free at that wedding. It's that kind of thing, isn't it?
Yeah. And that's all I can, really talk about. Obviously, that middle lane drinking, because,
Yeah.
yeah.
And that's where a lot of people sit.
Yeah,
A lot of
so
people sit
many.
in that area where you're drinking too much, but not. And that's where I sat in that area where drinking too much, but not enough to flag up
No.
really to anyone that there was a problem.
No.
It
Yeah.
becomes that internal voice. So would you say then in sobriety that you listen to your gut instinct more?
Yeah, and I think I've always been quite self-aware, and I think I'm just lucky, because again, alcohol doesn't care who it gets, doesn't care who you are. I think I was lucky in the sense that I managed to listen to my body early enough because I don't know where it could have gone if given the chance. I don't think it would have gone down that route because I think because I am in a stable, good place in terms, that I don't think it would have. I think I could have carried on moderating, but my God, the energy, and I definitely wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So, oh, the difference, the difference.
Let's talk a little bit about authenticity as well, because as somebody who is in the fitness industry, wellness industry, you look amazing. You've got me into Pilates. But you are in that space. Alcohol, how does that sit in that kind of wellness space? Because I've noticed my two Pilates instructors, neither of them drink. So, and these are younger women. So it's nice to see in the wellness industry that there's a lot of awareness. But I've also, in my time working out at the gym, come across people, instructors, who will drink and then think they can out exercise that alcohol.
That was exactly me. Yeah, so I used to think that because I lived and breathed health and fitness, eat so well, exercise so much, and doing all the things, again, the ice bath thing, the saunering, and all of that, although that's more of a later on thing. But I was one of those people that thought, well, I do everything else. Well, this is my only vice. This is my only thing that I do, that, have a glass of wine or two at the weekend. But do you know what used to really, really annoy me? And actually, sometimes, you'd think the fitness industry would be really good, but I've worked in a couple of boutique places. And so they would have like Prosecco Friday. So it would be like come along to a class and then just have Prosecco afterwards. And it's like, why? Then you need water after you've just done a massive spin class and you've sweated beyond belief. You have that Prosecco, it's going to go straight to your head. And I couldn't believe that they were trying to market, and this is a lot of places did this, that they would market it as like, oh, enticing, come along to this spin class and then we'll all just chat over a Prosecco afterwards. And I used to a lot of the people I've taught, that whole yummy mummy kind of brigade, because I'm that age, so I used to have a lot of people similar age to me, and they would be exactly the same. They'd kind of come in and go, oh, had a bit too much today, or they'd come in, do their spin class, and they'd get changed, put their lippy on, and go out for a boozy lunch, with the girls. And absolutely, there was this massive offsetting. I do think it is changing. I think it's changing because there are more people on, obviously, the platform Instagram now who are promoting that they are just stopping drinking because it just doesn't make them feel good. Like me, it was not making me feel good. It was not impacting my life in any other way. It just was making me feel rubbish. And especially when you get to your menopause. And it also, when you hit your menopause, your perimenopause, if you're drinking, you have no clue what are your symptoms from the perimenopause and what are your symptoms from alcohol, because it's all blurred. So you remove the alcohol, and then actually you might realize, well, maybe your symptoms aren't that bad. Maybe it was more the alcohol that were causing these perimenopausal symptoms, So I just think you get to this menopause age and yeah, everything just goes. And the other thing I thought of as well, Louise, it's like, you know what? I had a great kind of years of drinking. I had some great times. And you know what? I don't regret them. I don't regret them. And it was all fun, most of it, because nothing for me, luckily, bad happened. But I think to myself now, look, okay, but I'm nearly 52. I don't want to live. And it's not even the second half. I'm well over half. If you think about realistically, I'll be lucky if I get to my mid-70s, 80s. Who knows if I'm lucky. So I'm over halfway. I don't want to live these years when, let's face it, we're only going to get more chronic pains, illnesses, whatever. Our bodies are going to go downhill, however much we look after them, fact. Why do you want to add a poison into that? So I don't want to live my life as I did in my younger years. I want to have a completely different last third of my life. I want to live it with authenticity. I want to live it with growth. I want to live it with passion and meaning. And I want to protect my body as best as I can, because we don't know how long we've got left. We have no clue. So, you know what? If I can look after my body and just feel like I'm living my best life and best version of me, I'm gonna damn well do it.
And you made a very good point earlier. You'll get days where you don't feel good because of illness. Everybody gets a cold or, a bug or something. You don't want to be purposefully going out there and writing off half a day to a day. And did you notice as you were in your 40s, a hangover was hitting a bit harder when you hit perimenopause?
Yeah, when I got to 48, when it all, yeah, it just literally, it was like anxiety went through the roof, heart palpitations at 3 a.m. And those were the two main things. They really, wow, it was, yeah, it was quite something actually. I literally, to the point once when I had some friends over for a pizza and Prosecco night, and it was a great night. It was all finished by 10:30. And I was so anxious that I'd been, we were dancing in the kitchen, but hey, it's not the end of, worst thing in the world. I was so paranoid and anxious, I didn't go to the school for a whole week to the school gates to pick up my son. Luckily, he was old enough to walk home, but I'd normally go up there. I didn't go for a whole week because I really thought that I'd made a fool of myself, or did anyone think less? I don't know what I thought. It was ridiculous, but that's how bad the anxiety got. Yeah. It's like, who wants to live like that?
Yeah. When you start the morning, I used to have that as well, 3 a.m. heart racing. Oh, I've done it again. But when you start your day like that, it goes downhill. You're not exactly going to have the best day in the world when you start like that. Even if you don't have a hangover, you've still started the day with that beating yourself up and
Yeah.
that low self-worth. Yet when you wake up sober,
Yeah.
well, it can only, it's great and it can get better.
Yeah.
It's
And
lovely.
when you're then sober, you wake up, you start your day well, and then you make yourself a beautiful breakfast, and you take care over that breakfast, and you bring in all lovely lots of healthy nutrients, and then you feed your body that, and then you are off to a winning day, right? Because you've got up sober. And you've given yourself some nice fuel. If you can do some exercise, if you can get out for a walk or whatever it is, those are the things that just help you to just move through life a lot calmer. And that's what I felt, much calmer and able to process things in a slightly more controlled way. There's less roller coaster emotions. Everything's calmer. Sometimes it's very subtle. These things are subtle. Sometimes you don't notice massive changes, again, if you're a middle-aged drinker. But I think now when I look back, even just this past 6 months, I think, wow, the things I've now done. But that isn't just these 6 months, I'm afraid. It is the 4 years. It was 4 years of becoming sober curious. And I don't want that to sound like put people off. You know what I mean? Oh God, 4 years. That's my journey. But it was 4 years of just trying, just becoming curious, trying stints without going back, trying going without. And for me, it was without a doubt, my life is 100 times better in terms of just the way I feel. And I wouldn't swap that for anything because oh God, your mental well-being as well as your physical well-being. It's just everything, and it's all linked anyway, isn't it? It's everything.
And you mentioned your husband still drinks.
Well, hardly at all. And he's never drunk a lot. He's always been one of these, again, could easily just have a glass of wine, no difference. But yeah, again, I was probably the enabler. He would drink more with me. But he's cut back massively, massively. He doesn't drink in the house with me. He'll have maybe a glass of wine if he goes out for dinner with someone, but generally with me, we don't drink together. And we just come back, well, not that long ago, but from Peru. And I mean, he'd have the odd glass of wine, odd beer, but that's fine. But again, it's naturally everything's washed off onto him, and he's seen what a difference it's made to me just in terms of my outlook and my growth. And my positivity and my passion. I think he's seen all of that. And I think when you're around somebody like that, you kind of go, well, I want that. We're both studying, we're both doing our thing, and we're both really growing in our own worlds. And yeah, there's no place for alcohol, really. There's just, it does, we don't miss it.
So how was that holiday then? Because I've seen the pictures of Peru. I mean, what didn't you do? But isn't that the difference? We're just planning next year. Izzy really wants to go to Rome. And so we're going to go for a few days to Rome and take both girls for the first time on an aeroplane because we just never
Nice.
have got round it. We always like motor home everywhere. So we're going to go and do that. And as we're planning the itinerary, I was onto ChatGPT the other day going, plan my itinerary. Where, what can we get in over this day? And it's amazing because you can then see that you can get so much more in. You can see more things. I mean, it has got a list. I wouldn't be able to do it if I was drinking.
Or if you did, your mind would be on the 5 o'clockies. When are we
Yeah.
going to sit down and go to and sit in a bar and enjoy a glass of wine, for goodness sake? And you'd maybe like go zip, zip, zip around the Vatican, zip, zip, zip,
Yeah. Where's the bar?
Yeah.
Where do they serve the wine? Yeah, exactly. And I did do that years ago. I did go to Rome and I was drinking at that point. And I did find, I can remember, and I can still order a beer in Italian. I'm going to have to learn what alcohol-free beer is. All my memories really are is sitting in a bar looking at the view rather than going and actually walking around and properly looking at it. So, how did you find your holiday then, Peru?
It was amazing. And I have done other holidays alcohol-free, so I have done them. But in a way, there was no room for alcohol in this trip because with Peru, backpacking around Peru, there's a lot of early starts. So thank God I wasn't, because sometimes we were up as early as like 2:30 a.m. to then do a bus ride, to then climb a mountain at high altitude. You know, it was just exhausting. So it's really full on. We obviously made our own itinerary. But had I been drinking, I would have then just been, I probably would have been that kind of going for dinner and having a glass of wine or showing a bottle of wine or I don't know, whatever it was. But my focus would have been more on that, not more on that. I've always been, so even when I was drinking, we'd always do sunrises. I'd always do sunrise sea swims. I've always been a good doer and getting out there. So that's never changed. But I would have, so if I'd have been drinking, I wouldn't have drunk crazy amounts because of the early starts, but I would have, and then I would have been feeling more meh. And I probably wouldn't have got nearly as much out of it. And I think that's where what I've done, like, even though I've always loved early mornings, but I've always got up early regardless. But now it's just with this extra zesty passion for just like these sunrises. For me, it's that start of a new day, the possibility and hope that that brings. And I just love when I'm away. When you get up really early, you can beat the tourists and you feel like you, because I'd hate feeling like a tourist.
Even though
Obviously,
we
I
are
am one.
tourists.
But I hate being around other, you know, everyone else, and I hate being around big crowds. So I always drag my husband and my son out really early, sunrises, because then you get the whole place to yourself, wherever that is. So that for me is where I get my now dopamine hits from. It's kind of doing those sorts of things because it makes you feel a little bit crazy, a little bit mad, a bit like sunrise winter sea swims or, you know, whatever it is. That's how I get my little dopamine hit. So holidaying, it was fantastic. And I did not miss it once. Once. And we ended up in Miami actually, and that was, I had one little craving when it was more of a holiday atmosphere when we got to Miami rather than just hiking and trekking up mountains. And I saw everyone with the Aperol spritzes. And I had this fleeting moment of, oh, that looks nice. And then all I do, if that ever comes into my head now, is like, but you'd want more than one. And then I literally can just go, you'd want more than one. So, just not worth it. And that's all I have to do. And I can, every time it's worked and it just goes and it's amazing and it's few and far between.
And that is the difference when you've taken alcohol off the pedestal and you see it for what it is. You can just, well, actually, it's probably the glass and the color of the drink that looks nice. If that was an alcohol-free something, then brilliant.
And you know how people say, look, you know, I can never say it's forever, you know. And I get that. I get that. And for me, I've always clung on to that. Well, I don't know if it's forever, but you know what? This time round, for the first time, and it's not like I'm saying, oh, I'll never ever drink again, because I suppose I don't want to set myself up for failure. You know, you don't want to kind of say these things. I don't want to set myself up for failure because you don't know what you're going to be hit with and you don't know how you're going to react. But the difference is what I'm able to say to myself is flipping it on its head and saying, there is no benefit. I see no benefit of alcohol to me. There is no benefit. And I truly believe that. I know I am so much happier. I know I am achieving so much more. I've got two chronic inflammatory conditions, arthritis, and I've got an autoimmune inflammatory disorder, disease, whatever you want to call it. Alcohol's an inflammatory, so it causes inflammation. Why? So why then would I want to then just put fuel on the fire? So again, it's another reason I don't need it. I've had enough experiences now of going out where I just have such a nice time and I can deep belly laugh without the need of alcohol. Look, I'm not going to lie, I still don't like going to parties. I don't think I ever like going to them, and that's why I drank. So I don't like going to parties. And sometimes I have put boundaries in place and said to my husband, if it's a big family party, you go because you will have fun and then you don't have to worry about me. And I'm going to stay here and have an early night and I'm going to love it because I'm going to read, I'm going to go to bed. It's all good. I'm a morning person. I don't want the big parties. I just don't enjoy them. But I think that's okay. It's okay.
And it's that permission to be you. I mean, it's absolutely fine. I'm not a big party person either. I'm not big gatherings, big, it just doesn't do it for me. I'd much rather one-to-one conversation, quality
Meaningful.
time. And actually, after a certain point of the day, I'm winding down to go to sleep.
Yes.
You know,
That's from 6 o'clock for me.
Same here. I'm like, right, okay, we're on the, mind you, you've now got me into Pilates. I'm doing Pilates in the evenings.
You doing that in the evening? Oh, well done.
Yeah, because I
Yeah.
can't in the day, I'm too busy, and then I've
Yeah,
got the
no, fair
kids.
enough. But
So
that's
I'm
nice if
ending
it
it.
works for you. You're finding
Yeah.
something that works for you.
And it's a really nice environment
Yeah.
because it's an alcohol-free way of socializing,
Yes.
and it's sort of on your terms. So if you want to stop and chat, you
Yeah.
can. If you just
Yeah.
want to turn up, get on the mat and not talk to anybody, you can do that. I love it. I love it. And that's actually a new thing. I wouldn't have done that years ago. There's no way I'd have gone out in the evening and worked out, just not even to the gym, because that was drinking time. And so that's changed my world.
Yeah.
It really has. And it's been watching you doing your amazing moves on Instagram on your Pilates machine. It's just phenomenal. And you're so right. It's having that awareness that we're all aging. Why wouldn't we do the best that we can for our bodies?
I think so. There's a whole second phase of your life when you get to your midlife that we just sometimes really need to shift our that mindset and reframe it. You know, oh, I'm too old. No, you're just beginning. You know, it's that whole reframing, isn't it? And using different language and just actually thinking, no, actually, there's a whole second life ahead of me now. Until you get some space in your life, it's very difficult to see that. And for me, removing the alcohol was allowing me to give me that space. To really step back and see, look, okay, I've got this and this in my life. What can I do with it? You know, what can I change? What can I grow? What can I do that's gonna bring me, nobody else? I'm not gonna do this for my kids. I'm not gonna do this for my husband. I'm not doing anything for anybody else because the more you show up as yourself and do things for you, the more you just find your own tribe or not, you know, whatever it
Or
is.
decide that you don't want to go to
Yeah,
the
or the tribe
party.
that you don't.
I think we've got a lot in common. We've always said that
Yeah.
before. We've got a lot in common.
Yeah.
But it's not suddenly that you have to become antisocial, but you can just be you. It's like you
Yeah.
don't need to fit in. You don't want
No.
to fit in.
Yes. It's embracing all these quirky little things about yourself, you know? So.
Oh, Lucy, it has been amazing. It's been lovely to see you. You
Oh.
always look so healthy, so glowing, which is just growing every time I see you.
Oh, bless you. It's been lovely to talk to you. Re honestly, really, really, really privileged to be given this space just to, I hope I haven't garbled too much. It'd be lovely to be given this space and just to chat to you because, again, you're inspiring and I feed off inspiring people as well. So just so grateful for the time you've given me and the space that you provide because it's second to none. It's brilliant. It's brilliant.
And if you'd like to find out more about coming to me as a client, as Lucy mentioned, on that package, then head to my website, louisaevans.com, where you'll find lots of useful information. You'll find links to lots of things that I've produced, and you'll also be able to find a range of self-hypnosis recordings if you'd like to try that for yourself. Use the code SOBERREBEL to buy one, get one free on all those recordings. I hope you enjoyed the episode today as much as I enjoyed recording it. Thank you so much for listening.